Yuuzhan Vong charged again, and Jaina fired. Another warrior fell, and the rest came. Anakin flipped another 5 meters back, then felt someone, a Yuuzhan Vong, creeping along the far wall of the crash hall. He retreated until he could see the figure. The Jedi imposter, perhaps 30 meters distant, dragging a heavy cargo pod toward the strike team's makeshift opening. The warriors arrived again, and Anakin had to defend himself. A purple blade ticking back and forth, blocking and parrying and slipping strike after strike. He faded 2 steps and saw an opening. He brought his feet up and planted his heels in the center Yuuzhan Vong's chest. His lightsaber flashed twice, cleaving the skulls of the adjacent warriors. Then he kicked off, launching himself into a series of force-assisted cartwheels. Anakin continued far enough to see where the imposter had come from, a work area near the Queen's pen. Dozens of tendrils lay stretched along a workbench, each ending in a small cloning pod, some open, some closed. It looked like a tissue transfer station. That was what the imposter had, a cargo pod full of Voxen tissue, enough to clone 1 million. Anakin's aura flashed and dimmed, flashed again and dimmed more, his cells rupturing in chain reactions, the cycles coming faster and faster as less of him remained to contain the energy. He felt himself not exactly departing, but melting back into the Force. He pulled his last thermal detonator off his harness and thumbed the timer 3 clicks. Go now. Anakin, I can't, Jaina calmed. Anakin raised the detonator so his brother and sister could see. 30 seconds. He released the trigger. Take her, Jason. Kiss Tahiri for me. With the charging warriors almost on him again, Anakin threw the detonator across the crash hall. He wasn't conscious of using the Force to guide it, but he must have. Because it hit the imposter in the head. Anakin was too busy parrying to see what happened for the next few seconds. But when he finally managed to spring away from his attackers, he was no longer strong enough to flip or cartwheel. The imposter was gathering himself up, rubbing his head and searching for what had struck him. Even from 30 meters, his broken nose and misshapen eye orbit identified him clearly as Nomanor. When the executor's gaze fell on the silver sphere, his eye grew large. He reached down. Anakin used the Force to nudge the sphere away, then caught an amphistaff in the ribs and went down hard, letting his lightsaber fall from his hand. His aura was only a faint glow, flickering between dim and non-existent. The maelstrom inside was dying away now, flowing back into the Force. Nomanor rushed for the detonator again. Anakin waited until the executor was almost on it, then reached out with the Force one last time, rolling the sphere toward the cargo pod. He did not hear the angry curse that followed, nor did he see Nomanor fleeing at a dead run. By then, Anakin was gone. Han was with Lando in the study of his Eastport apartment, trying to do the New Republic a favor and finding it impossible as usual. An anguished wail echoed down the corridor, so shrill and frenzied that Han did not recognize the voice as human, much less Leia's, until he was already out of his chair and snatching his blaster holster off the table. Leia! Han raced down the corridor to Leia's private study, where he found the Nogri, Adarak, and Meewal flanking the desk and looking uncharacteristically confused and helpless. The furred image of the Bothan General of the Orbital Defense Command was staring out of the vidscreen, looking confused and inanely repeating, Princess Leia? Princess Leia? Leia herself was lying on the floor, curled into a fetal ball and screaming something incomprehensible. When Han saw no obvious threat in the room, he knelt at Leia's side and grabbed her arm. Leia? She did not seem to realize he was there. Her eyes were rimmed in red and her tears were pooling on the floor. And the only thing Han could get out of her was a long, The Bothan general continued to repeat, Princess Leia! Princess Leia! Lando came into the room and, ignoring the comm unit, put a hand on Han's shoulder. What is it? Han shook his head and looked to the Nogri.
Lady Vader was speaking with General Ba'atra, Meewal explained. She was explaining how Lady Reasoned Calrissian is already on her way with 1,000 YVH-1s. Then she suddenly stopped speaking.
Leia grasped Han's arm and began to sputter, And Han knew. Anakin was gone. And Leia had felt him die. Han wrapped Leia in his arms and held her. Just held her. I'm here, Princess. I'll always be here. The strike team was hiding in a one-room lodging cell on the outskirts of a domicile warren deep inside the world ship, trying to stay out of sight until Tizar reported back with news of the Queen's location. They had seen no sign of Nomanor or his troops since the battle in the Grashal, when they had escaped by bringing the passage ceiling down behind them and fleeing into the heart of the world ship. Jason could feel the guilt and anger tearing his sister apart, though her emotions were so intermingled with his own that he could barely distinguish them. They shared a void that would never again be whole, an emptiness that he sensed pulling at Jaina like a vacuum breach. He laid a hand on her knee, hoping his touch might serve as her anchor. We can't give up. We still need to destroy the Queen. Jaina looked up, a faint spark of presence finally showing in her vacant eyes.
You left him to the Yuuzhan Vong.
We had to, Jason said, accepting the rebuke. As much as he himself was hurting, he would rather Jaina lay the blame boiling up inside her on his shoulders than her own.
They were all over him. You saw that.
Jaina pushed his hand from her leg.
He put you in charge, and you left him behind.
Jason said nothing. They were spared by a low growl over their comlinks. Jason snatched up his own comlink. Tizar? He asked. As the strike team's stealthiest member and only natural night hunter, the Barabel had been the obvious choice to send slinking through the murky lanes of the domicile warren. Did you find her? He was answered not by the Barabel's voice, but by another low growl.
Loey?
Jaina gasped, grabbing her own comlink.
Is that you?
Lobaka confirmed his identity with a groan, then began a long apology for allowing the tachyon flyer to be stolen.
Loey, forget it. They fooled us too, Jason said. Where are you now?
The answer Lobaka rumbled was considerably more than a location. Why would they do that? Jason asked. Lobaka grunted a guess.
Keep watching, Jaina said, and whatever you do, stay with him. I'll be there as soon as I can.
She snapped her comlink off, and Jason barely caught her arm before she reached the door.
What are you doing? Going after Anakin's body. What do you think?
It was Tahiri who said this, speaking for the first time since they had fled the Grashal.
They're not taking him anywhere.
She rose and went to Jaina's side, as did Alima, and a moment later, Zek. Jason ignored them all and continued to hold his sister's arm.
What about Anakin's last words? He asked. He told us to destroy the Queen. Then destroy her.
Jaina tore her arm free of his hand and slapped the tickle pad.
But I'm going back.
Even before Jaina peered into the sunken compound, she feared they might be too late. An oily column of pyre smoke was rising out of the pit, gathering beneath in a blackened valve that periodically cracked open to puff the fumes out into the vacuum. Lobaka groaned softly and pointed over the rim. Being careful not to push any ash over the edge, Jaina eased herself forward and saw, 20 meters below, a handful of Yuuzhan Vong warriors playing some game that involved kicking a snarling spike creature into the opponent's bare chest hard enough to make it stick. Standing off to one side, weaving Anakin's lightsaber through a surprisingly smooth practice routine, was Vergere.
So where's Anakin?
Tahiri hissed. Lobaka gestured at the warren beside the warriors, then to a nearby airlock, explaining in a soft rumble that the lock opened into a small docking pit where Vergere and her companions had a shuttle waiting. Jaina and the others donned their vac suits, then camouflaged themselves with a coat of ash and spent the next hour watching the gruesome rites below. At last, the Yuuzhan Vong subaltern emerged from the warren and summoned two of the crew inside. Jaina cautiously lifted her power blaster out of the ash, clearing the emitter nozzle and targeting sensors with a quick breath and rub of her tunic.
Blast them when Anakin's out where we can see him,
Jaina said over the comlink.
We'll jump down and get him, then commandeer the shuttle, go find Jason, and finish this thing. Check,
Zek said, acknowledging the order. By the time the others had checked off as well, the subaltern was walking into view. Behind him came the two crew members, an Anakin-sized husk suspended between them.
May I have the officer?
Alima asked, setting the long blaster's sight on the subaltern.
Take him,
Dana said. The others named their targets as well, Tahiri taking the front husk carrier, and Zek the back. Lobaka set his sights on the pilot, and Jaina aimed her power blaster at Vergere.
I've got Featherbag, she said. Fire at...
Four blaster bolts lanced down into the mortuary pit, but Zek's hand crashed down across Jaina's barrel, and her shot went wide, burning into the ground next to Vergere's feet. The creature was already jumping to one side, Anakin's lightsaber coming around smoothly, as though she actually knew how to use it, a notion that was dispelled when she let it slip from her hand and clatter bladeless to the ground. Jaina whirled on Zek.
What did you do that for? I had her. And we don't know you should have.
Zek retorted almost as hotly.
She's done us no harm and she's had the chance. The company she keeps is harm enough.
Jaina peered back into the pit, but her target had already snatched Anakin's lightsaber up and ducked out of sight, as had the spared husk carrier, taking with him her brother's body. By now, an astonished murmur was rolling across the compound as the crowd below began to realize they were under attack. Jaina shouldered her blaster, then snapped her lightsaber off her belt and hurled herself headlong into the pit. Using the force to slow her descent, she performed a twisting flip and landed facing into the warren, midway between Tahiri and Lobaka. Alima was on the other side of Tahiri, her long blaster rising to her shoulder. The warrior whose life Zek had spared was backing under the wall, using Anakin's body to shield himself from the Twi'lek's weapon and drawing his kufi.
You two secure the shuttle,
Jaina ordered Loey and Tahiri.
Alima and I will get Anakin.
As they scrambled to obey, the Yuuzhan Vong plunged his kufi into the husk and cut it open near the head.
You want your Jedi?
He thrust the blade through a layer of clear gelatinous slime and placed the tip on Anakin's cheek.
Stay back, or I give him to you in pieces!
The long blaster roared, missing the Yuuzhan Vong but demolishing the keystone of the arch behind him. He flinched and looked over his shoulder at the tons of rubble crashing down behind him, then turned back toward Jaina and moved his knife toward Anakin's eye. Rage boiling inside her like magma, Jaina reached out with the force and shoved Anakin's body hard. The Yuuzhan Vong yelled in surprise and stumbled back into the collapsing arch, his kufi sliding away from the eye. Jaina jerked her brother free of the warrior's grasp and sent him floating in Alima's direction. Take Anakin, she said. As Jaina spoke, she was opening herself to her anger, using the power of its emotion to draw the force into her as the Dark Masters Brakkis and Tamith Kai had tried to force her to do so long ago, when she and Jason had been imprisoned at the Shadow Academy with Lobaka. The power came surging into her in cold waves, feeding on her hatred of the Yuuzhan Vong, pouring it back to her twofold. In a motion so fast Jaina barely saw it, the warrior sat up and flicked his kufi at her throat. She could have dodged or blocked with her lightsaber, but she did not. Instead, with the fierce energy crackling inside her, she used her free hand to bat the weapon aside, then raised her hand toward her attacker and released the dark power within. A fork of lightning crackled into existence a few centimeters beyond her glove tips, then blasted a hole through the Yuuzhan Vong's chest, hurled him onto the rubble pile, smoking and motionless. Alima came to Jaina's side and, somewhat tentatively, took her by the arm.
We'd better go. Everyone's aboard but us.
Like some insectoid model of a Coruscant skyline, the hives had over countless years of habitation climbed entirely out of the bug pit, their serpentine spires now scratching at the vaulted ceiling from atop a 30-meter mound of carapace detritus and discarded chrysalides. Though the colony was as deserted as much of the worldship, the long-neglected glow lichen still shined just brightly enough to reveal the legs of a dead Yuuzhan Vong protruding from an acid hole in the base of the innermost tower, jerking and jiggling as the body was devoured by a voxen. The voxen, Jason hoped. "Too bad we don't have the long blaster," Ganner said softly. "I can guess where she is, and we could burn a hole right through that nest."
"This one thinks it is better for him to sneak around to her blind side," Tizar hissed. "If she flees, you will be here to attack and pursue."
When Jason nodded, the Barabel leapt onto the wall and climbed silently to the ceiling, where he seemed to melt into the shadows. A faint tingle crept down the back of Jason's neck, a tingle that continued to grow as Tizar neared the tunnel mouth. There was something wrong here, something they were not seeing. Tenel Ka touched Jason's arm, and he knew she felt it too.
"Tizar," Jason hissed. "Wait!"
"Wait?" Ganner asked, disbelieving. "What for?"
"Be quiet," Tekle whispered. "It feels wrong."
"Something landing?" Ganner asked. Tizar nodded.
"Something big."
A thump rumbled down through the Yorick coral.
"This one could go look," Tizar suggested.
Jason passed over the electrobinoculars, and the Barabel bounded up the passage on all fours. A minute later, Tizar reported,
"Frigate analog. Perhaps the one that brought Nomanor. Its shuttle is missing."
"Any sign of an assault company?" Jason asked.
"The boarding ramp is down," Tizar replied. "But the ones who used it are already gone."
A few minutes later, Tenel Ka said, "Perhaps the Force brought the frigate to us after all." She pointed into the hive colony, where several dozen Yuuzhan Vong silhouettes had emerged from hiding places near the Voxen. The unarmored leader appeared from inside a spire and stomped down the detritus mound, circling toward a passage about 70 meters around the pit from that of the Jedi. He was met just inside the colony by an eight-fingered shaper whose cage of glow bugs revealed the leader's face to be that of Nomanor. The two immediately began to speak and gesture harshly. A moment later, Vergere came waddling out of the tunnel, Anakin's equipment belt strapped around her body like a bandolier, lightsaber and utility pouches still hanging in place, his comlink set dangling in the empty blaster holster. The sight of his brother's captured equipment filled Jason with sorrow and self-reproach. Vergere glanced in the direction of the Jedi. Her hand brushed Anakin's comlink, and suddenly two angry Yuuzhan Vong voices were coming over the comnet. Though he could not understand the conversation coming over his comlink, he did hear two familiar words, Jedi and Anakin. Nomanor gestured angrily toward the Voxen's hiding place. Vergere spread her hands, then pointed up the passage from which she and the Shaper had come. She rattled off something that included the word Jaina, which prompted the eight-fingered Shaper to turn and gesture into the hives, repeating the word Voxen time and again. Then the boom of an exploding missile reverberated through the Yorick coral. Vergere turned and bounded away around the detritus mound. Nomanor and the Shaper remained where they were, barking questions at her vanishing back.
"Jaina?"
Ganner gasped.
"Who else?"
Tenel Ka replied. Another blast shook the passage, this one closer than the first, then a second eruption even louder. Flakes of glow lichen began to snow from the ceiling. High in the colony interior, the legs of the dead Yuuzhan Vong vanished from sight as the startled Voxen dragged him out the backside of the hive and disappeared, never presenting a shot to the Jedi below. A third explosion shocked the dust off the walls, and loose chunks of ceiling began to bombard the insect city. The assault shuttle flashed over its target and pulled up sharply, preparing to wheel around for yet another attack. The frigate finally answered, launching a flurry of magma missiles and plasma balls from its portside weapons bank. At such short range, the missiles lacked time to fix on their target and streaked past harmlessly. The two plasma balls exploded into the shuttle's rear quarter, blasting through the firewall and sending it spinning into the sky. Tizar feared for a moment that the shuttle would explode or spin itself into pieces, but then Jaina, at least he assumed she was the pilot, somehow brought it under control and banked away. The craft climbed 500 meters, then belched flame and began a long, wobbling descent toward the horizon.
"No,"
Jason gasped.
"Jaina will bring them down softly. You know that," Tenel Ka said.
"No, I don't," Not anymore. Jason reached out to his sister and spent the next minute or so struggling to stay in contact with the dark emotions that now filled her. She did not seem frightened, only angry and focused on the effort at hand. Then, as he sensed her efforts growing even more intense, her anger abruptly deepened to a level that Jason could not bear, and he lost her. "She's gone," he gasped. "Dead?" Ganner asked. "I don't know." Jason looked up. "I didn't feel that. I just don't feel her at all." Out in the bug pit, the dust had settled enough to see the Yuuzhan Vong clearing rubble. Although pieces of ceiling continued to fall at increasing frequency, it soon grew apparent that the collapse had so far caused few casualties. Nomanor was already standing at the edge of a fallen hive, glaring down with a sour expression as a pair of assistants pulled the Shaper from beneath the debris. Once the Shaper regained his feet and a little of his dignity, he brushed himself off and began to speak sharply to Nomanor. Jason thought for a moment they would continue their argument, but after a while Nomanor only nodded and pointed up the tunnel leading to the surface and their frigate. The Shaper nodded back, then took the warriors and started across the colony in pursuit of the Voxen Queen. The executor shook his head wearily and started up the tunnel toward the frigate. He had barely departed before a squeaky voice came over their comlinks.
"It is safe to come out now, young Jedi. You have nothing to fear from me."
Jason motioned to the others to ready their weapons, then activated his comlink. "Who is this?"
"There is no time to explain that now."
As she spoke, Vergere came around the colony on the side opposite the one she had departed, then pointed in the direction the Voxen Queen had fled.
"Your quarry is escaping."
Jaina woke to the sound of laughter. With a bright light shining in her eye and a stink in her nose like a Gamorrean refresher station. The laugh was just the sort of mad cackle one would expect in a Kalauan rill den, but she knew better than to think her throbbing head and aching shoulder were the byproducts of a spice dream. This nightmare was real. Nomanor's frigate had shot down her stolen shuttle. Jason and the rest were stranded on an enemy world ship. Anakin was dead. With both valves of the distant airlock drawn open, a bright crescent of blue sun could be seen blazing out from behind Merkur's rising disk, illuminating the million pillars of the Serpent Hall in gloomy streaks of sapphire. The Shaper and his escorts were little more than stick silhouettes filing toward the exit in a single line. The Voxen Queen was not visible at all, though Jason knew she was there, in the gap two figures from the front.
"This is not right," Tizar rasped quietly. "That airlock can't be open."
"It is better to seek an explanation than to deny what we all see clearly," Tenelka replied. "There is an atmosphere outside that lock."
"Yes, but what else?" Bergere asked. "That is the question, is it not?"
"How about you answer it for us?" Ganner replied. Bergere spread her arms and gave a feathery shrug. The Yuuzhan Vong vanished through the open airlock. Jason nodded to Tizar, who rose and set off. The Barabel kept them concealed in a fungus-lined rift, for the area was strewn with Yuuzhan Vong workers scavenging the exhausted serpent yards for a usable amphistaff or Tsaisi baton. The fissure and fungus both dwindled away as the group neared the airlock. To avoid drawing attention, the Jedi activated their holoshrouds and, keeping Vergere screened from view, marched through the airlock disguised as Yuuzhan Vong. They found themselves standing on the inside rim of what looked like an enormous impact crater. In the bottom of the basin lay what resembled a giant honeycomb, save that each cell was a meter across and held a single Dubin basal. Nomanor and his followers were making their way toward the center of the basal comb, where a huge sweep of cells contained either shriveled husks or nothing at all. In the heart of this dead area rested Jaina's stolen shuttle, cracked and overturned, but still in one piece. The sporadic stream of blaster bolts and magma missiles arcing out of the wreckage suggested that at least a few Jedi had survived the crash. Vergere hunched beside Jason, her gaze running from the Queen over to Nomanor's frigate, where four warriors stood watch at the base of the boarding ramp.
"Interesting. Will you destroy the Voxen, Jason Solo, or save your sister?"
Jason ignored the question, and continued to study the situation. The long blaster roared and split open a warrior in front of Nomanor. The executor shuddered, but lowered his head and continued forward.
"I don't understand," Tekle said. "The shuttle is helpless. The frigate should be attacking."
"Yes," Tenelka agreed.
"Why crawl so far under fire?"
"Why, indeed," Vergere said. "Perhaps there is something aboard they want alive?"
"Jaina," Jason said. Vergere spread her hands.
"And you. Tsavang La promised Yan Yamka a pair of Jedi twins for the fall of Coruscant. Matters will go badly for Nomanor if she is already dead."
Tizar checked the power level of his mini-cannon, then braced it on the crest of the slope and trained it on the Voxen.
"Jason, this one has two shots, maybe three. We must destroy the Queen."
Jason nodded. "And save," he almost said Jaina, then caught himself. "Our friends on the shuttle." "What about her?" Ganner motioned at Vergere with his blaster. "Once you're on the frigate, she's free to stay or leave with us as she likes," Jason said. While unsure that she was an enemy, Jason hardly considered her a friend either. Needless to say, he now had Anakin's lightsaber clipped to a spare hook on his equipment harness. "Until then, if she makes a false move..."
"Blast her,"
Vergere finished. She gave a flip of her four-fingered hands, then turned to Tizar.
"On the bridge of the Kastar, you will find a pilot, a co-pilot, and a communications subaltern. The Master Keeper will also be aboard somewhere. They are not permitted to leave while the vessel is in action."
"This one shall keep the information in mind," Tizar said, "and also where it came from."
Tizar passed his mini-cannon to Ganner, then removed his jumpsuit and slipped over the rim of the basin on all fours. His rough scales camouflaged him against the Yorick coral's dark background, and he moved with such slow reptilian grace that it immediately grew difficult to pick him out. Jason risked a glance at the frigate. Whether or not the ramp guards realized who he was, the sudden appearance of a single Jedi had proved too much of a temptation. Leaving one warrior on station, the other three were racing after him, amphistaffs in hand. Behind them, Tizar Sevatine's dark figure was creeping into the shadows beneath the frigate's nose, gathering himself to pounce on the last sentry. Jason raced after the Shaper and fleeing Voxen. The mini-cannon roared once, then twice, and two of his pursuers fell. The third dropped under a torrent of T-21 bolts. Jason did not even look back. By now, Tizar would be boarding the frigate, the others rushing to join him. The Voxen pulled away fast, the Shaper less so. Jason pulled one of two thermal detonators from his belt, thumbed the fuse to the first click, used the force to hurl it into her path. The Queen whirled away from the silver ball, found her handler in the way, and slapped him aside. Jason saw an arm fly in one direction and the rest of the Shaper tumble in another. Then the Voxen was racing toward him, head rising to belch acid. He activated his lightsaber and charged to meet her. She disgorged her acid at three paces. Jason launched into an airborne round-off, and the brown spray shot past below. Then the detonator crackled behind him, and he found himself swinging at empty air. He landed lightly and sprang into a half-twist that brought him around facing the same direction as before, and his heart rose into his throat. No Voxen, only the brilliant flash of the detonator shrinking in on itself. Blinded, Jason brought his lightsaber around in a block and slash, reached out to locate his quarry. She was off to the side, moving away slowly. He blinked the dazzle from his eyes and found her crawling out onto the basal cone, angling away from the battle, angling away from Jason, her body so broad she had to straddle the wall between the cells. He left his T-21 slung on his shoulder and started after her. He had only a handful of shots remaining, and the bolts would not penetrate her thick scales anyway. Tenel Ka's voice crackled over the comlink.
"Frigate secured. We have a way home, but also a complication."
Lobaka rumbled a question.
"How does not matter,"
Tenel Ka replied.
"When we found the communications officer, he was in contact with the spaceport."
Jason groaned inwardly, then asked, "Vergere?"
"She said she had no wish to be atomized, then departed,"
Tenel Ka said.
"She she seems to be following you.
Jason reached the basal comb and had to slow. The walls between cells were a half meter wide, but so steeply crowned that running over them was like running on a board's edge. The Voxen stopped at the next cell convergence, where the walls met to form a sort of island, then whirled, eyes expressionless and black, the force heavy with her grim resolve. The creature knew why he was here. She was not angry, not hateful, only determined to save herself. Jason did not want to kill her. He had never wanted to kill any animal. Perhaps she sensed that in him. Jason's head started to spin. He had to finish this. Flicking his lightsaber to hold the creature's attention, he dropped his free hand toward his last thermal detonator. The queen came bounding. He pulled the detonator off his harness. She stretched forward to snap at his head, then surprised him with a claw to the shoulder. The talons bit deep, launched him off his perch. The detonator flew, inactivated, from his hand, and the Dovin basal appeared beneath him, rising fast. He whipped his legs over his head, flinging himself to the opposite side of the cell. Landing dizzy and off balance, Jason continued in the same direction, this time flipping higher to buy more time. A trio of coral skippers streaked past overhead, their noses pouring plasma balls toward the center of the basin. Coughing, fighting to stay conscious, Jason sat up and saw the stolen frigate lumbering skyward beneath the bombardment. It launched a magma missile, which vanished into a shielding singularity the instant it neared a skip. With a large enough crew, the frigate would overwhelm the smaller craft easily. With a handful of Jedi, it would be torn apart piecemeal. Jason activated his comlink, but was interrupted by a familiar burping sound. He rolled over his good shoulder and came unsteadily to his feet. A fan of brown mucus landed where he had been lying. Then the Voxen began to advance. The acrid stench of her blood staggered him, made his lungs burn and his head spin, and nearly sent him tumbling down into a Dovin basin. The queen reached the convergence and stopped. They were separated now by a sizzling pool of her acid. Jason brought his lightsaber to middle guard, tip angled forward, his wounded arm hanging limp. Behind the Voxen, the 100-meter bulk of a Yorick Coral Corvette swept in and cut him off from the rest of the strike team. They were battling now, his friends and a whole flotilla of arriving Yuuzhan Vong. A wave of nausea dropped Jason to a knee. Eager to press the advantage, the Voxen gathered herself to spring. A thermal detonator splashed into the pool of acid. The fuse had not been activated, but that was all Jason saw before the silver casing sank into the sludge.
"Could that be important?" Bergère called.
She was coming toward him, thin arms extended for balance.
"I saw you drop it."
Jason's jaw fell.
"How did you..." "No time."
Bergère pointed. The Voxen was scrambling along the edge of the convergence, fleeing the silver sphere. The detonator could never ignite without a properly set fuse, but what did the queen know about detonators? All spheres of shiny silver were to be feared. Jason sprang feet first, caught the queen dead center, heels driving high into her ribs, forcing her over the edge. She dug her claws deep into the Yorick coral and saved herself. Jason landed beside her, hard, and the breath left his burning lungs. The darkness began to rise inside him. No, tried to rise. He stabbed his lightsaber into the Yorick coral and began to cut it from beneath the queen's claws. Still intent on escaping the detonator, she released her front leg and reached for the adjacent wall. Then her support began to crumble, and her front quarters slipped into the cell. She brought her tail around, the poisonous barb driving for Jason's neck. He ducked behind his wounded shoulder, took the tip in an open gash, felt venom pulsing into his torn flesh, hot, stinging. Too weak to kick, Jason pushed with the force. Another leg came free. The queen, also weakened by injury, slipped deeper. A foot grazed the Dovin basal, then she was plummeting over the edge, collapsing in on herself, shrinking out of sight. Jason did not see the final flash of color. The barb tore free of his shoulder, and he was overwhelmed by dizziness, collapsing backward onto the convergence. Something began to sizzle, and his hand began to burn. Then someone lifted his arm and propped him up. The came a terrible thunder overhead. A firestorm so bright it lit the darkness behind Jason's closed eyelids. He heard a voice calling. A voice he had known all his life. Yet one that now seemed as alien as that of any Yuuzhan Vong.
Jason?
A pause, cold and demanding.
Jason, answer me!
A delicate hand brushed back Jason's hair, took the comlink from his head.
You can do nothing for Jason now,
a second voice said, also familiar.
Save yourselves.
Vergere?
The first voice demanded.
Is that you? I want to talk to my brother.
The comm was clicked silent. Jason opened his eyes and saw a delicate, four-fingered hand flinging his headset into the air. In the sky far above raged a battle, a Yuuzhan Vong frigate trying to blast through a screen of Yuuzhan Vong corvettes. Jason was confused, but only for a moment. The frigate was Noma Nor's, stolen by his friend, now trying to reach him. He struggled upright and saw a one-eyed Yuuzhan Vong leading several dozen warriors through a rain of plasma balls and magma missiles. Toward him. He tried to roll, found himself restrained by a four-fingered hand.
No.
Despite the apparent frailty of the hand, its strength was irresistible, at least in Jason's condition.
You have won your battles. Now you pay.
It took his lightsaber from his grasp, then unclipped Anakin's from his equipment harness, and took that one as well. Jason's stomach grew queasy. His hands trembled. He opened himself to the Force and smiled at his body's fear. The Jedi were safe. Compared to that, his pain meant nothing.
It will, Jason,
Bergere said, surprising him. He did not recall speaking his thoughts aloud.
That I promise you, it will.
A warm drop struck his face, then another and another. Jason craned his neck and found Vergere wiping tears from her cheeks. Her face was turned so Noma Nor and the others could not see.
Vergere, were you... Yes, Jason.
She pressed a finger to his lips.
I was crying for you.
They brought the Kastar around again. The targeting mask on Jaina's face showed three Yorick Coral corvettes coming straight at them. Behind the trio, the world ship was silhouetted against Murker, a huge gray disk overlapping an even larger green disk. The basin where she had last seen Jason was smaller than the last time they had come around, about the size of a Fefzi's compound eye.
Zek! She yelled into the targeting mask. We're farther away!
Because they keep getting closer, Zek growled back. We won't save him by getting blasted ourselves. Clear me a lane.
Done.
Cursing Zek for a Sith-spawned coward, Jaina raised her left thumb. The control glove on her hand activated the mask's targeting reticle, basically a set of increasingly blurry rings. She fixed her gaze on the rightmost blur and, working through trial and error, with no idea what the strange flashes in the viewfinder might mean, ran her right hand through an awkward finger dance that brought each concentric ring into focus. When the center disc showed a clear image of her target, she made a fist with her left hand. From the other side of the blast tool came the loud plop of the plasma gun's automatic loader and the deafening bang of the actuator charge ionizing the medium. Jaina's mask went dark, and the blazing sphere streaked away. The viewfinder cleared 2 seconds later. Her plasma ball was arcing toward her target, and a long line of enemy rounds was streaking back toward her.
Incoming,
she yelled. Zek put the frigate into a tight rising turn, and they swung away from the world ship.
Zek!
The Baka cut her off with an urgent bellow.
A fleet,
Jaina cried. She craned her neck around, and a dozen oblong flecks appeared in her targeting mask, streaking in from the edge of the system. Her heart fell. It wasn't a fleet, not exactly, but if they tried to return to the world ship, they would be trapped. A flurry of plasma balls blazed past under the Kastar's belly, then one slipped past Tizar at the stern shielding station and impacted the hull. The frigate shuddered. Zek's voice came through the mask.
Jaina, what do you want to do?
Jaina could not answer. There was only one thing to do. But how could she abandon Jason? After rebuking him for leaving Anakin, how? The Kastar shuddered again. A wet pop sounded somewhere aft, the door valve sealing against a vacuum breach.
Jaina! Zek yelled. I...
The words caught in her throat, like she was choking. She closed her fist and sent a plasma ball streaking into space.
Better for Jason if we flee, Tenel Ka said. With only one twin, perhaps they will delay the sacrifice until we can organize a rescue.
What rescue? Jaina thought. They had lost so many Jedi already. Even Luke would risk no more to rescue Jason. But he would not stop Jaina. Nobody would. That's what we do, Ganner said. Best thing for Jason.
Jaina? Zek asked. Your brother.
Just do it, Jaina thought. Don't make me say it. All right. Zek turned the ship away. I think I understand.
This one thinks you do,
Tizar said.
We all do.
Not possible. Mask filling with tears, Jaina craned her head around, and the world ship came into view, no larger than a fist. She closed her eyes, concentrated on that place in her chest that had always belonged to Jason. She felt him there, just a flicker for just an instant. And then she lost him. Then she could feel nothing except her own anger and hatred and despair.
We'll be back, Jason,
she said, finding the strength to speak.
You hold on. We'll come for you.
This is Alexander Adams. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Star by Star, by Troy Denning. This program was produced by David Rapkin and directed by Charles Potter. Abridgment by David Smith. Executive producers, Laura Wilson and Jacob Bronstein. Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Star by Star, is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2001. All rights reserved, used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music master production, copyright 2001, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House audiobooks presentation. All rights reserved.